Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 38. Chapter entitled Akura's Arrival in Vrindavan, text number 13.
Sa
Chavatirna
Chavatirna
Kila
Kila
Satvananvaye
Satvananvaye
Swasetu
Swasetu
Palamara
Palamara
Varya
Varya
Sharmakrit
Sharmakrit
Yasho,
Yasho,
Vitamvam,
Vitamvam,
Raja,
Raja,
Asta,
Asta,
Ishwaro,
Ishwaro,
Gayanti,
Gayanti,
Deva,
Deva,
Yad,
Yad,
Ashesha,
Ashesha,
Mangalam,
Mangalam,
Sachavatiran, Sachavatirna kila satsvatanvaye.
Sachavatirna kila satsvatanvaye.
Sachavatirna kila satsvatanvaye.
Sachavatirna kila satsvatanvaye.
Swasetu pala maravaya shamakrit.
Swasetu pala maravaya.
Swasetu pala maravarya sharmakrit.
Swasetu pala maravarya sharmakrit.
Yasho vitanvam vraja asta ishwaro.
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 Gayanti deva yadashesha mangalam.
Gayanti deva yadashesha mangalam.
Gayanti deva yadashesha mangalam.
Gayanti deva yadashesha mangalam.
Sachavitirna kila krishna. Sachavitirna kila sattvatanvaye.
Sachavitirna kila
Swasetu pala maravarya shamakrit.
Swasetu pala maravarya
shamakrit. Yashovitanvan vraja asta ishwaro.
Yashovitanvan vraja asta ishwaro.
Gayanti deva yadashesha mangalam.
Gayanti deva yadashesha mangalam.
Cha.
And.
Avatirna,
having descended.
Kila,
indeed.
Satvata,
of the Satvatas.
Anvaye,
in the dynasty.
Swa,
his own.
Setu, codes
of religion.
Pala,
who
maintain?
Amaravarya,
of the chief demigods.
Sharma,
delight.
Krit,
creating.
Yasha,
his fame.
Vitanvan,
spreading.
Avraje,
in Braj.
Oste
is present.
Ishwara,
the Supreme Lord.
Gayanti,
sing.
Deva,
the demigods.
Yat,
of which fame?
Ashesha Mangalam.
All auspicious.
Auspicious.
Translations by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. That same Supreme Lord has descended into the dynasty of the Satvatas to delight the exalted demigods who maintain the principles of religion he has created. Residing in Vrindavan, he spreads his fame, which the demigods glorify in song, and which brings auspiciousness to all. Translation responsibly.
That same Supreme Lord
has descended into the dynasty of the Satvatas to delight the exalted demigods who maintain the principles of religion. He has created. Residing in Vrindavan, he spreads his fame, which the demigods glorify in song, and which brings auspiciousness to all. Om Gyan Timananda Shya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Vedantikam Vancha Kalpata Rubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhi Evacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishna Vebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram 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 Hare Hare. So it's described here that Krishna has appeared within the dynasty of the Satvatas. So this refers to those who are in the mode of
goodness.
Right. One must be in the mode of goodness to be able to understand the personality of God, or the Bhagavan feature of God. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's described that the Godhead, or the Absolute Truth, has three features: Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, and Bhagavaniti, Shabjate. So there is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, like that. And all three levels constitute the Absolute Truth. Right? That's why in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the introduction, or in the preface, Prabhupada points out that the Srimad Bhagavatam does not deal with God. Maybe the Bible deals with God, or the Quran deals with God, like that. But the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with the Absolute Truth, the Param Satyam, or the Summum Bonum. The Ashraya. Because God is not just Bhagavan. Right? That is the ultimate realization of God. That God is a person. That is the highest realization of God. But in order to understand Godhead in full, you must also understand the Paramatma feature. Right? And you must also understand the Brahman effulgence. Right? And you must understand the correlation, or the connection, or the relationship between these three features of God. Now, it's very common these days in the world. In India, it's been common for, you know, millions of years. And it's very common in the Western world these days that people think that the supreme realization of God is Brahman. God is light. And just like you go down to Gopal's and we have the magazine on the floor. What's it called?
Living Now.
Living Now. Right? So, you know, and they have all their articles in the magazine. Sometimes, you know, you flick through it while you're having prasadam, just for some light entertainment. There's informative things in there. They have, like, things about Ayurveda and stuff like that. But nearly, practically 100%, if not 99%, of the articles in there speak of God as being light, or energy, or love. This is the highest conception people can have of God in this day and age. That's the most common conception of God. So then, when it comes to the Vedic school of thought, or the Vedic culture, or the Vedic tradition, many people, even in the Vedic culture, are confused about what is the supreme feature of God, or what is the supreme understanding of God, what is the absolute truth. And they think, the Mayavadis, for example, because basically in Vedic culture there's two schools of thought. There's the Bhagavat school of thought, or the personal school of thought, that God is a person. And there's the Mayavadi school of thought, which is God is impersonal. So in the Mayavadi school of thought, which is very prevalent in India, in Vedic culture, then they put the equation upside down, right? Because in the Bhagavad school, in our school, in the, according to the Srimad Bhagavatam, we understand that the personality of Godhead is the topmost feature, right? And then the Paramatma, and then the Brahman feature. But what they do, they turn the school of thought upside down, and they say Brahman is the topmost feature of God, and Paramatma and Bhagavan are emanating from Brahman, right? And then they say that when God appears as a person, as he is in these pastimes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, they say that if God displays a personal form within this material world, because in the spiritual existence, right, in the impersonal spiritual existence, there is no form of God, but if that impersonal Brahma Jyoti displays a form within this material world, right, then that form is in the mode of goodness. Right? It is not absolute, it is not eternal. It is just Maya, it is just a manifestation of the Brahman. Right? Is everyone following the chain of thought? What they're saying? It doesn't make very much sense, does it? Really, I mean, how does that light, like this is the philosophy. You take one of those light bulbs, you can see, if you look right into the light, you can see like there's effulgence, right? There's light, there's energy. Right? That's Brahman. Right? That's undifferentiated light or energy, like that. So from that comes a person. Yeah, work that out. Work it out. You know, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense. Right? Somehow a person just comes out of it. And the whole philosophy of, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna defines spirit in the second chapter of the Gita, from verses 11 to 30, Krishna describes the difference between matter and spirit. Right? Many famous verses are there, Nasato Vijate Bhavo, Dehinosminyata Dehinetvivaham, all the famous verses about the soul, the difference between matter and spirit. Right? So Krishna describes himself that the nature of spirit is sthanam. Right? Sthanam means unchanging. Right? Spirit does not change. So the Mayavadis say that spirit is absolute. Right? The Brahman effulgence is absolute. So if it is absolute and it has been defined as unchanging, then how did it all change? Right? How did we, who are little particles of the great ocean of the Brahma Jyoti, how did we break off and then fall into the material world and be covered by this illusion, which doesn't really exist anyway? Right? And then, you know, the sum total of all that consciousness comes as, you know, Krishna, which is just a Maya manifestation of the absolute truth, which is actually in the mode of goodness. Yeah, that's part of their philosophy also. Yeah, that's part of their teaching. Yeah. So this is their conception that the Brahman effulgence is the absolute. Right? That is the supreme understanding of the absolute truth. And the personal feature is simply a manifestation of that. Right? So that is upside down. Right? That is illogical, actually. And that's why Srila Prabhupada points out that simply when you're preaching to Mayavadis, they're just juggling words. Or they say it's all one. Or they say it's all beyond understanding. Or it's beyond the conception to... words cannot describe it. Right? So it's just juggling words, just throwing words around to confuse everyone, like that. So generally when we preach to these people, or if we have to preach to Mayavadis, then we don't get too deeply into things with them usually. Right? And Prabhupada gives the example of the two men who were on the bridge arguing over which is the best way to cut the paper. Right? Should we use the scissors or use the knife? Right? So one was saying scissors and the other one said the knife. Right? And the argument became very heated. So the man who was saying scissors, he got the other man, he threw him off the bridge. Right? And he was drowning in the river. And he said, I will save you, but you must concede that the best way to cut the paper is with the knife. Right? And the man said, no, scissors. And he said, no, knife. And he said, no, scissors. And he said, knife. Right? And then he started drowning. Right? And as he was going down underwater, right, he came up and he said, scissors. Right? And then he went back down underwater again and he said, no, knife. Like that. And then finally, in his last breath, he said, "Scissors!" And he went down, right? He was drowning. And then as he went down, he was going. So that's what the Mayavadis are like, right? They'll just argue and argue and argue and argue and just throw all the words around and around and around. So best policy, we have several options. One is to walk away, one is to cut out their tongue. And the scriptures give you various options. You can choose A, B, C or D. C is that you defeat them philosophically, and D is that you put a pakora in their mouth. Right, which is the best? Right, you just put the pakora in your mouth and just say, "That is the absolute truth." Right? Meditate on that. Right? According to you, the pakora is not there anyway, so it doesn't really matter. So that is their, that is the conception of the absolute truth. They think that the absolute truth is impersonal. So, and then you'll see in the world religions, right? Then that's Mayavada philosophy. That's like Mayavadic thought. That's like a low level of understanding of the absolute truth. And then higher than that is when you get the various religions we have the world around the world, like Islam and Christianity, like that. So it is slightly higher conception, slightly higher than like just a base, like impersonal conception. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto and the second chapter, Shukadeva Goswami points out, you cannot understand the Bhagavan feature of the Lord, or that the Lord has a personality, right, unless you are in the mode of goodness. Right? You have to be in the mode of goodness to accept that God has is a personality. And you'll see these days in the world, most of the world, especially the Western world, people are situated in the modes of passion and ignorance. So because people are situated in the lower modes of nature, when you present the effulgent form of Krishna, right, in his absolute form of eternality, knowledge and bliss, the supreme personality of Godhead, they look at him, but they're so covered by passion and ignorance, they can't perceive this is the supreme personality of Godhead. Very difficult for people to understand. Even these days it's difficult for people to understand God as a person. What to speak that he's a cowherd boy who's wearing a peacock feather in his hair and he's playing on a flute and he's wearing a yellow dhoti and he steals letters. No, very difficult for people to understand. Just like in Catholicism, if you go to the Sistine Chapel in Rome, is in Italy, then Michelangelo depicted God on the roof of the Sistine Chapel, very famous painting, very powerful man, right? Long white beard, long white flowing hair, long white robes, you know, reaching out to touch the jiva, the soul of his children, like that. Is their conception of God. God is a person, but obviously he's very old, he's very wise, he's very majestic, like that. That's his conception. So it's very difficult for people in the lower modes of nature to understand the Navayovanam, or the eternally youthful form of Krishna. Right? Krishna is eternally a youth. Right? When the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in the war was fought, and the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, how old was Krishna at that time? Or how long had he been on earth at that time? Not 125 years, because he only stayed for 125 years. So it must have been... Yeah, around about 94, like that. Yeah, it was around about that. It was around about 100, right? Now, if you go and see your great-great-grandmother or something, right, who's 94, and ask her to read the Bhagavad Gita to you, right? She's not going to look like Navayovana. Right? She's not going to be a fresh youth like that. But Krishna, Prabhupada points out, although he was on the battlefield and he had children and great-grandchildren by that stage, still he looked like Navayovana. Prabhupada said he didn't go past the age of 25. Just still a young man like that. Right? Not old in any way, shape or form. So that is Krishna's eternal situation. But in order to understand Krishna, then one has to be situated somewhat or greatly in the mode of goodness. Therefore, our lifestyle, as was taught from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad school of thought, then our lifestyle is based on principles in the mode of goodness. Right? The Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us that we have to follow four regulative principles. No meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no gambling. If you engage in those activities, right, it'll be very difficult for you to raise yourself to the platform of the mode of goodness. Right? You see people who engage in those activities very much in passion, very much in ignorance. And the more you become addicted or instigated or consumed in those activities, the more you'll be in passion and ignorance. You'll see. People who eat meat, it's very tamasic to eat flesh. Right? And it can be rajasic also. It can be a very passionate activity. Right? Illicit sex is a very passionate activity, which leads to ignorance. Right? That. Intoxication, very tamasic, very mode of ignorance activity. And what's the other one?
Gambling.
Also very passionate activity, which leads into ignorance like that. So therefore, if one wants to understand God in his personal form, one has to be very strict in following, in the beginning, right, and all through his devotional service, the regulative principles. Right? It means you have to live a lifestyle in the mode of goodness. The more you are in the mode of goodness, the more you can realize Krishna like that. And even in devotional service, right, it must be understood, these are the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it must be understood, you can only understand Krishna if you perform devotional service in the mode of goodness also. If you perform devotional service in the mode of passion or mode of ignorance, you can say, oh, well, I'm doing devotional service. Yeah, you may be doing devotional service. But while you're doing that service, if you're too much in passion or too much in ignorance, your realizations will be limited. You have to perform devotional service in the mode of goodness. Right? Why? Why do we have to perform in the mode of goodness? What's wrong with passion and ignorance?
Passion results in distress and ignorance results in foolishness.
Yeah, well, that's basically it. As Krishna says in the Gita, that's basically it. Or if you take it... Yes, sir?
From mode of goodness, you can go to transcendence more easily.
Yeah. Why is that?
Passion and ignorance involve self-desire and self-experience.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It's a good point. But why is it that mode of goodness can take us to the mode of pure goodness more easily? Why is it?
Mode of goodness, the desire in the mind or the
That's good. Is that a point? That's a good point too. Yeah, that's a good point. So it is mentioned by the Acharyas in their commentaries on the Bhagavatam, the mode of Shuddhasattva or pure goodness in which Krishna is situated eternally and the spiritual world is eternally constituted of, and all the pure devotees, just like we see Srila Prabhupada, who's in pure goodness, Shuddhasattva, not the mode of goodness, but pure goodness. The Acharyas point out in their commentaries on the Bhagavatam, it is very similar to the mode of goodness. The two, they look very similar, right? They're not the same. One is material, one is spiritual, but they're very similar, right? So in order to go into the pure mode of goodness, one has to do devotional service in the mode of goodness. And then one, Prabhupada describes it as like a springboard that you can then jump into the mode of pure goodness. You can't get into the spiritual world from the platform of passion or ignorance, even if you're doing devotional service, right? Mode of passion means, right, the spiritual world's there, or it's probably there, right? The spiritual world's there, and mode of passion means I'm just going to run, right, as fast as I can, and just charge into the spiritual world, crash in there. That's mode of passion. I'm just going to get there, I'm fired up, whoa, let's go, whoa, like that. It doesn't work like that, right? And mode of ignorance means you won't even get out of bed. Yeah, you're just lying in bed saying, "Yeah, I'm going to go to the spiritual world tomorrow, on the next day." Like that. That's your consciousness, right? So, in the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance, it's not possible to enter into spiritual consciousness directly. So, therefore, when we're doing our devotional service, we have to purify ourselves gradually, and this is the process of bhakti, purifies the effects, as the Srimad Bhagavatam points out in the second canto, in the second chapter of the first canto. The devotional service purifies one of the effects of the modes of passion and ignorance. Right? So it means you have to learn to do your devotional service beyond passion and beyond ignorance. Right? You'll see sometimes devotees are always running here and there. Right, running here, and then running there, and then running. That's motive passion. It's devotional service. Did you ever see Srila Prabhupada running while he's doing his devotional service? Like running here and running there. Right? Usually it's just motive passion, and you're trying to do too much, or, you know, always running late and always, you know, you see quite often, you know, when the deities, the curtains are opening, or before Mangalati, everyone's running around. It shouldn't be like that. Right? Motive goodness means everything should be very peaceful, right? Everyone should be there on time, early. As Prabhupada was always punctual, always early. Come to the place at the right time. Do everything with plenty of time, peacefully, for the pleasure of Krishna, right? Meditating on Krishna, what you can't. It's very difficult to meditate on Krishna in the mode of passion. Right? If you're in the mode of goodness, you're picking up Krishna's offering plate to take it off the altar, and you're meditating upon Krishna. This is Krishna's offering plate. Krishna, you've finished your prasadam now. Now we'll take it. We'll take it off the altar, right? And then we'll clean your table. Meditating on Krishna. You have time to meditate on Krishna in the mode of goodness. This is what the spiritual world is like. Mode of passion means, oh, we're running late, Quick, get it off. And smashing everything, right? Things spilling everywhere. That's not... can you imagine a scene like that in the spiritual world? Right? It doesn't happen like that in the spiritual world. That's the point. And devotional service in the mode of ignorance means that we're always, you know, sleeping in, right? Always getting up late, always late for our service, right? Sleeping in and getting up late and then running, you know, because now we're late to do our service, completely under the modes when you're doing your service. You know, the offering's supposed to be ready by 7:55. I come to the kitchen at 7:30 to start cooking, right? Because I'm all, you know, I'm all under the modes. And then you're like cooking some offering for Krishna, just getting all passionate. What sort of an, do you think Krishna appreciates that kind of offering? How about if Krishna comes around to your house and cooks for you like that? Right? Then how do you feel? Right? So you have to treat Krishna like a person. Why? Yes, hello. Hello. Right? He's a personality. Right? We are persons because he is a person. Right? He is the supreme personality of Godhead. To do any service for Krishna, whatever service we do for Radha, Vallabha, Gaur, Nityananda, any service is the greatest privilege in existence. Right? It is the greatest. There's nothing higher than doing a service for Krishna. Sweeping the floor of the temple. Right? So some materialist will come from outside and say, oh, this person is just very simple. He's just sweeping the floor for Krishna. Right? Not very, I run a company. Right? I'm an IT operator. I'm a very educated, very qualified person. This person is just sweeping. No, no. That person is sweeping the floor of the temple for Krishna is far superior to anyone in the material world. Right? Because the activity is connected directly to the supreme personality of Godhead. It is the highest activity. And all our services should be treated like that. With the greatest respect and privilege that, you know, what is our good fortune that we're even allowed to do these services for Krishna? So we should be treated like that. All our services should be offered to the highest standard for Krishna. Right? Everything should be first class. Right? That was Prabhupada's mood. Right? When Prabhupada was has anyone been to the Juhu Temple? Yeah, the Juhu Temple in Bombay? You been there? Like that? Yeah, you've been there? When I went there, because I'd read about it in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, I'd read about, you know, because that was Prabhupada said, when Mr. Nair, right, there's the whole pastime took place. Went on for about 3.5 years, the whole pastime.
Yeah.
And he took the land back. Right, cheated the devotees, took the land back, you know, gave it to us, we paid the money, took it back, you know, very demoniac, you know, not nice, right? Tried to cheat the pure devotee of Krishna, right? Tried to cheat Krishna. So that went on for years. It was a big struggle, a big fight, a big battle, right? And then finally, after like, you know, 3 or 4 years, they got a message that Mr. Nair had died of a heart attack. And Prabhupada said, this is confidential, but Prabhupada said, I've been praying to Lord Nisrinidev to kill him. When Prabhupada found out about the news, Prabhupada said, yeah, good, now he's dead. And then Prabhupada said afterwards, that was the best fight. He said, that was the best fight of my life. Tomorrow Krishna was in the room with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada leaned back on the pillow and he said, that was the best fight. That was, Prabhupada enjoyed that, like that. So it was such a struggle to get that temple established. And Prabhupada put Radha Rasa Bihari, right, the beautiful deities. And when Prabhupada first had the land, they just had a little tin shed, right, and the deities were worshipped in that tin shed. And Prabhupada promised Krishna, he said that if you just stay here on this land and accept the worship of the devotees in this tin shed, he said, although it is not adequate, it is not for you, I will build you the most beautiful temple. I promise you. Right? So Krishna agreed. Right? Radha Rasa Bihari stayed there on the land and Prabhupada built. And when I went there in 1993, because I'd read this pastime, the Lilamrita, and I'd read all about it, and when I went there and I saw that temple is so opulent, so beautiful. Right? Such an opulent temple. You just have to go there to really understand what Prabhupada did. Right? You get so much appreciation for Prabhupada when you see what he did to build that temple. It's so opulent, so beautiful. Then when I went there, then I really understood Prabhupada's mood. Right? Everything for Krishna should be first class. Right? Krishna should get the best of everything. Right? And we should offer Krishna the best of everything. Right? That should be our mood. Right? I remember Prabhupada wrote a letter to Tamal Krishnamaraj in the very, it might have been like 1969 or something like that. And Prabhupada said to Tamal Krishnamaraj, Krishna can give you the whole USA if he wants to, but what will you do with it? Right? So there's no lack. Right? We have Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Srimati Radharani, the Supreme Goddess of Fortune, right, who are right here, right, accepting the worship of all the devotees every day. There's nothing lacking. Right? There'll never be anything lacking. Right? Krishna may only hold things back because we may not use the opulence properly if he gives it to us. Otherwise he can give us everything. He can give us the whole world right now if he wants. Right? Prabhupada said that if all my disciples surrender to me fully, we can take over the world in 18 days. Right? If everyone's ready to fully surrender right now, if everyone in this con is ready to fully surrender right now, Prabhupada said the whole world can become Krishna conscious in 18 days. Right? But then what would we do with it? Right? Maybe we're not pure enough. Or obviously we're not pure enough because it's not happening like that. So the point is that devotional service must be performed in the mode of goodness. Right? From the platform of the mode of goodness, then you can transcend into Shuddha Sattva, like that. In the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, you have to perform Bhagavatam says, one must perform devotional service continuously, ahoituki apratihata, without motivation, without interruption. And then the modes of passion and ignorance gradually get cleansed away from one's consciousness, till we come to the level of being a pure devotee of Krishna. That's the goal, to be a pure devotee of Krishna. So today is a very auspicious day, because it's the fifth day of Kartik Mas. And it's also the disappearance day of one of our great acharyas, right? Srila Narottama Das Thakur, who was a Paramahamsa Vaishnava, pure devotee of Krishna. I didn't realise how significant an acharya Narottama Das Thakur was until my friend Atul Krishna Prabhu, who preaches in Bangladesh. I think he's there now, he's probably there today. A few years ago I was in Mayapur on this day, and he rang me from Bangladesh on this day. Usually he's preaching in Bangladesh at the moment, so he's probably there at the moment. And he told me that when they have a program on this day, like today in Bangladesh, they'll have a program, ISKCON will hold a Pandal program. He said 100,000 people will come. 100,000 people, right? Because it's Narottama Das Thakur's appearance day. He's such a saint. He's the principal saint practically in Bangladesh. And I just learnt also the other day on Bhakti Srip Damodar Maharaj's disappearance when we had the program. I think Tota Gopinath Prabhu said that in Manipur, it's a public holiday today. Narottama Das Thakur's disappearance. I didn't know. I mean, that's how influential Narottama Das Thakur is. In some parts of the world, he's the topmost respected saint in that region of the world. So he's the equivalent of Jesus or Muhammad in other parts of the world, like that. So, Narottama Das Thakur, he appeared in Bangladesh, which is East Bengal, like that, next to the river Padmavati. Now there's one river which flows there, a sacred river. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to that river when he went to Bangladesh, and he took bath in that river. And when he took bath in that river, then he came out of the river and he began to chant the name Narottama, 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 like that. And the devotees said to Mahaprabhu, who is Narottama? We don't know any of your associates who are called Narottama. And he said one great saint will appear in the future. His name is Narottama. A great saint will appear. Because Narottama appeared after Mahaprabhu, a little time after Mahaprabhu. So then, when Mahaprabhu took bath in the Padmavati River, he put all of his shakti, his bhakti shakti, right? His Krishna prema, he put it in. The Gauranga prema, that golden prema of Lord Gauranga, right? Gaura Sundara, the golden lord. His prema of Radharani, right? That golden mood of devotional service, pure devotional service. He placed that into the river when he took bath, and then he came out. And then, many years later, Narottama appeared, right? And then when he was darkish, you know, most people in India are darkish complexion. But then when he went into the river and he took bath in the river, then all of the prema of Mahaprabhu entered him and his complexion turned golden, same colour as Mahaprabhu. And then he came out completely transformed in love of God. Right? Just feeling ecstasy of love of God from receiving Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. He was born the son of a king. Right? He wasn't an ordinary person, he was the son of a king. But he was totally disinterested in material life. Right? He had no interest whatsoever to enjoy the material world. So therefore, he renounced the material world. One night he just got up and he just left. And he just started walking towards Vrindavan. And he walked all the way from Bangladesh to Vrindavan, which would have taken 1 month or 2 months or something like that, just to walk there. And he got there. But then when he arrived, many of the great souls had left already. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami had left, Mahaprabhu had left, you know, many of the great, the Panchatattva and their followers had left. So he took shelter of Srila Jiva Goswami. And he became the disciple of Jiva Goswami with Narottama, Narottama Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya and Shyamananda Prabhu. They became the principal disciples or followers of Jiva Goswami. And Jiva Goswami taught them the entire philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which was recorded within the teachings of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami and so forth. So then, he studied under Jiva Goswami, and then he took initiation from Srila Lokanath Goswami, who was also an associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and was also an associate of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So, Lokanath Goswami had taken a vow not to accept any disciples. Some of our acharyas took vows not to accept any disciples. Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he took a vow not to accept any disciples, and he only accepted Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur. And the Lokanath Goswami, some of our acharyas will take this vow not to have any disciples. So then, Narottama, every day, he would go to the place where Lokanath Goswami would do his ablutions in the forest in Vrindavan. And after he'd done his ablutions, after he'd passed, he would go there and he'd clean everything up. Right? This is the attachment he had to his spiritual master. Such a menial servant of his spiritual master, even prepared to clean up the stool of the spiritual master. So every day Lokanath Goswami was coming to this particular place and seeing it was all cleaned. And then after 1 year passed, right, Narottama would just come every day without recognition. Right? Normally when we do a service to the guru, then we want recognition. Mm-hmm. Right? We do the service and we just kind of stand there and look, pretending we're humble. You know, kind of like, you know, I'm very humble. You know, waiting for the guru to recognize us. Right? Waiting for the guru to say, oh, you're very, you know, special. You're such a good devotee. Like that. That's our motivation. But Narottama was so pure in his consciousness, he didn't want any recognition. He would come every day. When Lokanath Goswami would leave, then he would clean everything up. Right? The most menial servant of his guru. And he was an exalted, exalted personality. So then after 1 year, then Lokanath Goswami, then after he passed, then he hid in the bushes and he waited to see who it was who was coming to clean. And he saw it was Narottama. And he came and he said, do not do this. He said, this is not proper. Right? I do not want anyone to render me service like that. And Narottama said, please accept me as your disciple. And he said, well, I cannot accept. Like, I've taken a vow and will not accept any disciple. So Mahaprabhu had appeared in a dream to both Lokanath and Narottama Prabhu. He appeared in the dream to Narottama Prabhu and he said to Narottama Prabhu, you take initiation from Lokanath Goswami. And then Narottama Prabhu went to take initiation from Lokanath Goswami and he said, I will not take any disciples. So then Mahaprabhu appeared in the dream and he ordered Lokanath Goswami. He said, you must initiate
Narottama
Prabhu. Right? He must become your disciple. So then he initiated him on behalf of Mahaprabhu, accepted him as his disciple. And therefore every morning just before when we had Guru Puja, we sang the Sri Guru Vandana prayers written by Narottama Das Thakur. He says, Lokanatha Lokara Jivana. Like that. So he's praying to his spiritual master. Right? My spiritual master is delivering all the conditioned souls. Right? The pure devotee delivers all the conditioned souls. So then, Jiva Goswami taught them, and after teaching the three of them, Shyamananda, Narottama and Srinivas, he took the writings of the Goswamis. Many of the writings of the Goswamis are written in Sanskrit. So they translated them into Bengali and Orient and different languages, and then he sent them to go to Oriya, to Orissa, and to Bengal and so forth, and to take the teachings of the Goswamis, the teachings of Mahaprabhu, to the Bengali devotees, so that everyone was following the same teachings, so that the Sampradaya was consistent. Everyone was following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu properly, had the proper Siddhanta. So then they were travelling, and in the middle of the night, they got to one particular place, and there was one king, and he had an astrologer in his court.
Mm-hmm.
And the astrologer read, by astrological calculation, he said that these people who are travelling through your kingdom, they have a very great treasure in their possession.
Mm-hmm.
So the king was actually a great dacoit. So then he sent his dacoits to go and to steal the treasure from the party. So they were sleeping, and then they woke up in the morning, and all the grunters, all the scriptures of all the Goswamis, all their works had been stolen. You can imagine how they would have felt. Right? It would have been the most, distressing situation for them. So then Srinivas Acharya approached the king for assistance. And he was such a pure Vaishnava, Srinivas Acharya. He preached to the king and he converted him into being a Vaishnava, right? Because he was such a pure Vaishnava himself. And then the king actually admitted, he said, well, actually, it was me who stole all the. So he gave them all back. And then he became the disciple of Srinivas Acharya. So meanwhile, Narottama went out. He went down to. He travelled to all the holy places. He went to Mayapur, he went to Jagannath Puri, and he travelled through. Bengal and so forth, Bangladesh and Oriya, and he met all the associates of Mahaprabhu, everyone who was still living like that. There were many associates still living. And then he went to a place called Keturigram, which is like his ancestral home. Is it English? It's in Bengal? Yeah. In East Bengal, it's his ancestral home. So he went to that place, and along with Janava Mata, who was the wife of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, they held the first Gaupaneen festival. And they invited all the Gaudiya Vaishnavas who were still living, all the associates of Mahaprabhu, to come to that festival. And Narottama's cousin, who's I think his name was Santosh something. You remember his name? Santosh? I think his name is Santosh. He might have some other name. He became a disciple of Narottama, and he was very wealthy. He was a king. So they built a beautiful temple. Right, and they built a big prasadam hall, big kirtan hall, accommodation, beautiful gardens in a few months. Right, built everything with all the wealth they had, and then they put a first Gaupaneen festival, huge Mahotsava. At that time, Narottama Prabhu installed, I think, four sets of Radha Krishna deities and installed a deity of Mahaprabhu himself. And then all the Vaishnavas came, right. And they all worshipped these deities, and they all saw the installation and so forth. And there was, then the next day there was a big festival for Gaupaneen. And Mahaprabhu appeared in the dream of Narottama Prabhu the night before, and he said, during your kirtan, I will appear. I will manifest with the Pancha Tattva.
Mm.
Right? So then Narottama Prabhu was just in ecstasy, just awaiting for when Mahaprabhu was going to appear. So next day he began the kirtan, and his kirtan was a special, beautiful bhajans and beautiful melodies in all these different bhajans, the way they can be sung. He was singing very sweetly, and in the beginning of his kirtan, he was glorifying Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, right, and the Pancha Tattva, right, and Mayapur Dham. And then gradually in the kirtan he would then change, just like we chant Pancha Tattva mantra first, and we chant Maha mantra. So he would chant glorifying kirtan, glorifying Mahaprabhu, and then he would gradually move into kirtan glorifying Radha and Krishna. So the kirtan was ecstatic, and all the devotees, all the associates of Mahaprabhu, were just feeling great ecstasy and bliss. And then suddenly in the middle of the kirtan, the Panchatattva appeared with their principal associates. The six Goswamis appeared, right? The ones who had left Rupa and Sanatan. Swarup Damodar appeared, right? All the associates appeared there. And then all the associates then could smell the aroma of Mahaprabhu, right? Because bodily fragrance, which is the most attractive scent in creation, right? Mahaprabhu has this scent, the scent of his form is the most attractive scent in creation. So they began to smell this scent of Mahaprabhu before they could physically see him appear. They could perceive his scent, and everyone in the front just became overwhelmed in ecstasy. Right? It was described, it was like they were dancing in honey. Right? Imagine what it's like if you're dancing in honey. Right? You're kind of in slow motion. Right? So they were all dancing in honey, and then all the devotees at the back, they were seeing everyone in their front, something's going on, because everyone suddenly become very kind of ecstatic, overcome by ecstasy. And then gradually it went back, then everyone in the back also became the sun. So everyone was in ecstasy time Mahaprabhu appeared. Right, the Panchatattva, and he stayed with them for many, many hours, and everyone was just overwhelmed in ecstasy and having his association once again. So then, when it is described at the end, today is the disappearance day of Narottama Prabhu, when he finished his pastimes in this material world, it is said he entered into the river Padmavati, and it is said that his body, which was personification of prema, or personification of love for Krishna, it melted into the river. Right, just turned into liquid prema and melted into the river, and that's how he disappeared from this world. He entered into the Padmavati River and he just melted into the river, and then that was the way he disappeared on this day, maybe 400 years ago or so in this world. So today is a very auspicious day, and we can remember Narottama Das Thakur to get his blessings in Krishna consciousness. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. He's one of the Manjaris. Just like the six Goswamis are the Manjaris. Rupa Manjari and Rati Manjari and Lavanga Manjari, like that. So Lokanath Goswami, there's just like there's Ashtasakis, there's eight principal gopis, right? Lalita, Vishaka, Tunga Bija, Champakalata, Chitra, Induleka, Sudevi and Rangadevi. So the eight principal gopis. So there's also eight principal Manjaris. So the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, the six, plus Lokanath Goswami and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, they're the eight principal Manjaris. And Manjaris, assistants to those Manjaris also. So Manjari, I can't remember his exact name. Any other questions? Sattvatas means those who are in the mode of goodness. It means that everyone in Krishna's dynasty, because the demigods appeared within Krishna's dynasty, so it means they're all demigods are situated in the mode of goodness. So it means all of his associates are in the mode of goodness or pure goodness. No, Srinivas Pandit is one of the Panchatattva. Srinivas Acharya is a different person. Srinivas. One is Srivas and the other one is Srinivas. Like that. So he came, Srinivas came later.
And that's why I think we should have devotional service.